As a business leader, you know attracting top talent is just the beginning. Real growth happens when you lead yourself and others well. Creating a company culture that attracts, nurtures, and retains the best of all things. We'll teach you how to make an impact through a holistic leadership approach. Reframing success in leadership. This is the Talent Magnet Institute podcast with your host, Mike Sipple Jr.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us for today's conversation with Becky Sheeler and myself. Today's topic is your team, this crisis, and your future state, how to develop the team through crucial conversations that each member is ready to tackle in any crisis. So we appreciate you joining us. We do want this to be interactive. So again, we've got many clients and friends on here, and we would ask for you to just provide questions or create some conversation around this dialogue so we're maximizing all of our time together. And welcome to this week. So it's May 4th. For some of us Star Wars fans, this is a nice, fun day to enjoy and to celebrate. Becky, thank you so much for all of your leadership during this time and for joining me for this conversation.
Thanks, Mike. I'm so glad to be here. I actually came into the office, COVID ready, and sanitized, and I'm very glad to be back in the office. It's beautiful here in 401 Park and able to hear the dogs barking outside as they walk to the dog park. And it's just nice to be back with a little bit of normalcy. And then I'll be headed back home this afternoon for the rest of the week, work from home.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. And I have to say, it's a little different having someone in the building with me. So getting back to what it used to feel like.
But staying separated.
That's right. That's right. So Becky, one of the things that you've been right in the thick of this with so many organizations, you and I have been having dialogues, our team's been having dialogues real time. What are some of the themes that you've picked up on during this crisis, during this time, regarding communications and messaging and having dialogues with those that we're working with? What are you hearing from organizations and what are you really zoning in?
One of the main things I continue to hear is communication. How do we communicate? How often do we communicate? What does it look like? And I think that, you know, communication really hasn't changed much, whether it is in the middle of a crisis or when things are good. Leaders really need to be able to communicate in a very clear, concise way. And my experience in the business world for 30 plus years, I've had the opportunity to be around great leaders who communicate very well. And I've had some that communicated in a funny, but maybe not so great way. And I was reflecting on that. One of my first bosses used to sing the song back in the 80s. It was like, "What have you done for me lately?" And I think now, you know, leaders are really starting to make sure that they're always asking, "What can I do for you?" They are truly servant leaders. And I think that's so important. But again, you learn from the good and the bad leaders, and just making sure that what you are communicating is very clear. You have an end goal in mind. Once I'm done with this conversation, whether it's a one-on-one, "Hey, I think you can improve in an area," or a town hall meeting, or a communication about COVID-19. What do I want my audience to walk away from this with? So can you kind of retrack that again and make sure that it's all in alignment there? And then just to keep it very simple. At Centennial, for the last 12 years, I've had the privilege of talking to some very senior people, CEOs from around the world. And what always sticks out in my mind when I hang up the phone or after an in-person meeting with them is like, oh my gosh, a couple things happened. Number one, they were totally present. I felt like I was the only person in the world And everything they said was so simple. They have been running the largest engineering firm in the world or manufacturing all around the globe with the most complex supply chain. But everything seemed so simple when they explained it. They were able to talk to me, a recruiter that may not, or a consultant that may not know that industry, but I had a very clear vision and understanding of what they did. So I know that they could go from the plant room floor to the boardroom and everyone would understand what they were saying. So those are some of the things that keep it simple, have a clear vision on what you want the audience to walk away with. And then another thing that I think that great leaders do in great times and easy street times or in times of crisis is show the connection to what the vision of the company is and what the goal of the company is and how their daily activities impact that. So if I am, you know, sewing face masks or putting gaskets in a ventilator, I know not only how I'm helping the company, but I'm helping the community. I'm helping humanity across the globe. So just really allowing people to feel their value.
Excellent. Excellent. And what are some of the, any challenges that you're hearing from organizations of where they're, that's if it goes well, what does it not going well? How's that affecting people during this time? Any learnings that we don't want to repeat with equipping our audience?
So I think that one thing that we don't always do well, it's having those candid conversations where I know I need to communicate something and I'm really not quite sure that it's going to go across so positively with someone. And most of the time, those candid conversations are because you see an opportunity for that person to get better. And instead of avoiding it and saying, I don't think I can handle having this conversation, you really need to have a paradigm shift in saying, if I really care about this person, I'm going to share with them the reality and the truth and be honest, but do it in a very respectful way. So I can think back in a sales role that I had. One time I went to a sales meeting and was doodling on a piece of paper and we didn't get the sale. So coming back a couple, you know, a week later, I found out we didn't get the sale and I'm like, did we get any feedback? And I just felt like I wasn't getting the whole story. And finally it came across, well, the people that we were selling to didn't think that you were really all that invested because you doodled the whole time. Well, that's something I've always done. I didn't think of how it came across to other people, but until my manager took the time to tell me that, I would have never connected the two. And it sounds so simple now and so obvious. Yeah, that was like the rudest thing I could have possibly been doing. But until that came to light, I would have never known. So it's just, sometimes it's just an aha moment, but it really helped elevate me and my career and the company itself.
Yeah, I think that's a great learning, Becky. You and I obviously talk about it a lot, real-time feedback, right? So even, I mean, you've given me a lot of confidence over the years, as has our team, who's back in the green room with this webinar, are on live of, you know, we really communicate transparency and the only way we can get better is to share feedback with others, right? So you've got to have trust. But what I've learned as a leader is learning that when we don't share because we're afraid to hurt someone's feelings, we're holding someone's potential back, right? And I know our team has given me that confidence of like, just give it real time, do it with, what do you say? What's the phrase you use?
Radical candor.
Yeah. So radical candor and making sure that when we're doing it, we're not hurting others, right?
That's right.
But we're delivering productive and constructive feedback in a way to help others. And now is a great time for that because we're all experiencing leadership characteristics showing up in different ways. You're also probably as surprised as, well, some teams are, I mean, just kind of surprised by, wow, what all did we get accomplished in the last 7 weeks, right? And look around the team and say, I knew they had it in them in some cases. There may be other cases where you didn't know they had it in them, right? And people have really flourished during this time. And let's make sure we highlight that too. You know, performance feedback's not all about the negative, right? It's all encouraging the positive and the opportunities that exist.
Well, I've seen that happen recently twice, once in January and then through this whole event now. And both were somewhat of a crisis. I had a big presentation due in January and there was going to be 20 some people here at the office, and I had a slideshow presentation and a 2-hour talk, and my mother passed away. That was a big crisis. And the team was like, we can postpone this, we'll call, we'll get it canceled. And it was between her passing away and the funeral. And I'm like, no, we want to do this. And I really didn't lift a finger. The team here at Centennial did everything. I kind of waltzed in and looked like it went off without a hitch. It was awesome and very well received. So that was a personal crisis where the team pulled together. And I think that Mike, you and I think, and we all celebrated together. And certainly I made sure that everybody got the credit for that. And then when you look at a crisis like this, here is a team, Centennial, not the biggest team in the world, but the mightiest team, I think, where we've always had on our parking lot of things that we wanted to do, such as webinars. And over a weekend, we weren't doing them. And then all of a sudden, on Monday morning, we are doing them. So, again, it's pulling together and giving credit where it's due, being very humble. And when things don't go well, I mean, the fact is, in a situation like this, where there's not a playbook, there's not a process already made, in crisis, I do believe that part of growth comes with asking questions. What would you do? You know, how would you handle this? Well, in a crisis situation, a leader really can't go around going, hey, there's a fire. What do you think we should do? A leader does need to step up to the plate and take control. But I think it's also important for that leader to say, okay, course correct. I said we were going to do this and we're going to have to do that. I think DeWine just happened to have that scenario over the weekend. We're going to have to wear a face mask. But he got on and owned the message and say, you know what? New information came in. We're not going to wear a face mask. I just think that especially in a crisis, being able to course correct, own that this is what I said first, this is what we're going to do now is so important. And most people, I think, are going to respect the leader for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I would encourage those that are tuning in to share some thoughts and feedback around this particular topic, because this is a time to really reflect, kind of take a deep breath, just crossed over 2:15 on a Monday, and what do I need? Because the learnings here is about communications, providing accolades, and giving some real-time feedback inside that communication. I was listening to DeWine on Sunday morning with Good Morning America, and he shared, like, I recognized I crossed the line and we got an extreme amount of negative kickback from the mandatory face masks. And we needed to back that up. You know, we crossed a line. We did it out of good faith and trying to help. And we didn't realize how it was going to impact people and in the negative response. And you know what? They are adults and people can make their own decisions, but they need to follow the guidelines put out by their organizations. So it gets no different here. I mean, our team, Becky, I've just kind of been blown away as well, like how our team typically responds this way anyway. But we threw some things at all of us that none of us have ever even done. You know, it's not like we dabbled a little bit here, and I don't know what we're on now, like webinar 42 or something. it's been pretty intense. But all of the team, I mean, have just wrapped their arms around it. And now we're getting clients asking us to lead custom webinars for their businesses, prospects that we've never talked to who have attended asking us, hey, could you help us with this? And then a lot of ideas and curation of other organizations, other partners, other community leaders asking to collaborate. So it just shows that during times such as this one, that in our crisis, we can determine future state and respond promptly, right?
Yeah. I think that you bring up another important thing is that whole change management. So you, Mike, as the leader, you're always thinking, you know, okay, in July and November and January next year, what if, what if, what if? And so you've got all of these triggers going off in your head and little different roadmaps and sideways trips on those questions on what if. But as a leader, you need to bring the team along with you too. And you do that well. But sometimes what happens is leaders have been sleeping it and drinking it and seeing this situation way out in the future, where sometimes the managers and supervisors, it's going to take them a while to get there. First of all, you have to sprinkle the idea, and then you have to keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. It's not till seven times does somebody hear some information, will it really click into reality? Yeah. So we're going to have to do this. And people go, okay, yeah, right. And then when they hear it again, okay, maybe he's talking to me. You know, so it's like that seventh time as a leader where you feel like you might be banging your head against the wall, but you got to remember, you got to bring the rest of the team along with you. And it takes time.
Yeah.
And time is, it's hard because, you know, things are moving so rapidly, but you can't get frustrated with your team in an environment like this. You can just over-explain and over-communicate. And sometimes you can't share everything that's on your mind because it would be too overwhelming. But if you keep it simple and you keep repeating it and you ask for questions, I think you'll really get a lot out of that change process.
Yeah. Becky, the other thing is reflecting, right? So The last couple of weeks in particular have been really intense. And I'm sure that those on the call have experienced the same thing, right? That it's been really intense. And I would encourage us to also apologize to a degree to the team that we made it, you know, knowing I say to a degree, if you did something wrong, apologize. But if it's just you could feel the pressure is boiling, you know, take a time out, take a pause. I know I did that I do a lot of reflective journaling in my full focus planner and, you know, did some reflections. I could feel some tension, some energy, you know, and we've got so many customers that we interact with on a weekly basis and on the weekends. I mean, that's where for me, clients have, it's been like, there's not a shut off on Friday. We're always available. But now every weekend we're interacting with customers and interacting with partners and talking to various organizations and timelines. You know, we're this morning I had a call with an executive in Switzerland. Over the weekend I had a call with an executive from Australia that we've been interacting with a lot. And just everything is like all times of the day we're all on, right? And with me and my nature, I have to recognize as a leader that the pace, I know, again, some of the team who are on this right now are probably smiling or even laughing. Like, yeah, the pace is intense. And we need to take time out and pause, right? So what can we do to take a little pressure off? I even heard one leader over the weekend that I was listening to, a video blog. It was Adam Grant. Adam Grant put out something about, you know, you're naturally going to work. He's done some science and research that you're naturally, when you work from home, gonna put in like 1.6 to 2 hours more when you're working from home, on a daily average basis because you don't take breaks. You don't get up, which I would strongly encourage all of us to do. But what he said was we need to kind of relieve that pressure on the other side with our team and say, hey, we recognize this, right? So when you're kind of hitting your point at 2 o'clock and you feel like, my gosh, I've got so much done, but still so much to do, you may need to just call it quits for the day, right? Because you're naturally going to put in more time when you work from home. Some have less distractions, some may have more, but being aware of that and communicating that to our teams. So I'll be doing a little bit of an apology dance this week as we prepare. We've got, I think, 4 webinars this week, right? So lots going on. We're launching a couple of key things with return to work and with memberships, and our executive searches we're starting to see those come back online. Things are going to get heated up quite a bit. Becky, so you have talked, I'm going to post this, about real leaders showing up in crisis. Are there particular attributes or things that you've been hearing and focusing on as we come out of a situation like this? What is showing up that organizations need more of, and what's showing up that organizations need less of?
Well, I think that asking questions is really important of the leaders to get out and ask questions of the employees to make sure that they're understanding what is in the hearts and what is going on, and ask questions of, did this make sense? Did you understand? Or what could I have done better? I think a leader can do that and has to do that, because I can communicate great if I'm communicating with myself, because I understand myself really well, typically. But
we all think that, right?
It's not important for me to understand myself. I need other people to understand me. So making sure that the message is being received the way you want. And that's one thing that you can do, is get out and ask questions of your employees and of your staff. And then you also need to constantly, as you referenced, do a debrief and reflect on it. What could I have done better? What could I have done differently? And, you know, how did that message go? That's just really, really important to do. I think when you ask questions of your employees too, it just sends such a strong message that you trust them, that you care. It makes the employees start to present with stronger business acumen, their answers. So it's helping on so many different platforms when you ask back of your employees. And by the way, you as a leader, I'm not saying just you, Mike, you can't know everything. You're going to look at things differently. You're going to hear things from a different angle. The way you see it and the way I see it are very different sometimes, because you're looking at it from a very different angle. So those are some of the things that I think organizations, again, whether they're in a crisis or in good times, asking questions, what could we have done better? What can we learn from this situation? If and when this comes again, maybe not this crisis, but another type of crisis, what contingency plans could we have put in forth faster and better to be able to course correct quickly?
Yeah.
I think that word contingency planning, it's going to re-enter our vocabulary quite a bit now.
Yeah. So when we talk about growth-minded, I know we have a lot of conversations about what is a growth mindset, what is growth-minded. It's even in kind of our core values, right, of being a growth-minded environment. How do you factor that into who our real leaders are and what we're going to need for our future?
Well, we're in an ever-changing environment. I mean, from the business environment to the personal environment on January 1st of 2020 to today is completely different. And if you are in a growth mind, you learn ways to adjust. If you're in a fixed-minded, I have all the answers. I know everything. What worked yesterday is going to work tomorrow because that's the way of the world. You're going to probably lose. So making sure that, and for me and for us, growth-minded is gathering information and making the best decision possible. And that information can come from multiple places. And it's always reflecting too, reflecting back on, was that the best action? If it wasn't, I'm a humble leader, so I can admit when I was wrong, I can make the course adjustments.
Yeah.
And opening yourself up to that.
Yeah.
I also know that, as I said, I've been so fortunate to work in organizations that have, I believe, been growth-minded, very innovative. The first half of my career was at Fidelity. I mean, we were on the cusp of every bit of technology possible, business technology. And then the second half of my career here at Centennial, took 10 years off in between to be a mom. But here at Centennial, which I know is on the forefront of leadership and understanding great talent and connecting great people with organizations. But not every organization listens the way they should. And we've got a question came from someone in our audience about, what do you do when the organization leaderships don't listen? And I think that's a great question. If anybody else out there has some ideas, but typically I think that that is something that you just keep asking for from your leaders and say, I feel like I need this information. So I'm sure there's other people out there that need the information. Help me understand what's the pros and the cons of not sharing this information. Because again, you may not know either. So asking your leaders, is there a reason why we don't feel comfortable sharing this? Is there a reason that we should or shouldn't share? And then also bring other examples. I mean, you can Google, there's great CEO presentations out there on Google of how they are communicating to their constituents and to their employees their process to handle COVID-19. So I would say go out and Google and kind of take bits and pieces that work and make a suggestion to your leader. Because guess what? They may not be communicating because they're not sure how to communicate it. So if you have some ideas, kind of roadmap it out for them. You know, it's hard to tell not knowing a specific leadership team that's not good at communicating, but there's a couple ideas.
In terms of relationship processes and frameworks that have helped you in situations like this, I know you've offered a lot around asking questions and gaining insights, and you might learn something that you didn't even know you were looking for, right? You may uncover the unexpected. And any other key aspects of the relationship processes that you follow that help you during things like these?
Yeah, it's really interesting. There was a vendor to Fidelity, and it 30 years ago, I was one of the facilitators that rolled out this program across the organization. And it was called Extraordinary Customer Relationships. And it was ECR. There were a couple models that I think have transcended good times, bad times across 30 years of leadership that are so simple. Number one was the human business human model. No matter what situation you're in, whether it's a customer relationship, an employee relationship, a peer, you know, it's always nice to enter on the human. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all human. So part of that human is how you doing, understanding how they're doing. And that may be, how are you really doing? If there's an employee that you think is struggling and that's outside of their typical behaviors and performance, there might be something going on. So that goes back to, you're pulling in two things. You're asking questions. How are you doing is one question, but how are you really doing is a completely different question. And actually, this just happened last week. I had my Vistage leader and I were having a one-on-one. And she said, how are you doing? And then she said, how are you really doing? And she got two different answers. So that human business, human model, I think is so important across all of your relationships. We are human, enter that way. If the recipient doesn't want to go there, that's their choice. And then it's always nice if you end back up on the human side too. It's a very simple concept. Another model that I think that comes to mind all the time, and you've heard me say it for years, is the way I see it, the way you see it, and the way it is. Quite often, the way we see it as consultants is the client's doing X, Y, and Z, or the candidate's doing something. But when you sit in their shoes, the way they see it, it's a completely different view, circumstances, and you really have to get in a great practice of sitting in multiple chairs to look at the same event. So the way I see it, the way you see it, the way it is, you know, it could be, especially as we look at diversity and inclusion too, you know, the way I see it and the culture that I grew up in, if I behave one way, is very different than if somebody else from a different culture comes in and behaves in a different way. So you really have to understand that too. So again, that's probably one of my other favorite models that I use, is the way I see it, the way you see it, and the way it really is. And then the third thing is just keeping in mind that we all have tapes and we all have hooks. So tapes are the things that run in the back of your mind that say, this is the way that things should go because this is the way that I was raised. Yeah. This is the way that my first company did something, and this is the way that we do things here. Well, when somebody else comes along and breaks that cultural norm or that tape that's playing in the back of your head on the way things should happen, then you have conflict. And that's when you have to sit down and talk. This is how I saw you behave. And that person says, yeah, well, that's normal. Why wouldn't I behave that way? Now you've got a grounds for discussion versus thinking they were rude or something like that. And then the hook is, it's nice if you spend time listing out the things that you know take you sideways or derail you. I know things that derail me are when people don't take ownership or they play the blame game. If somebody starts to do that, it's my biggest pet peeve. And I can almost hear myself shutting down and not hearing what they're saying. Well, that's my fault because they may have started out that way, but they may have course corrected in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Just some things that I try and keep in mind all the time to help me be a better person and be a little bit more present. Mm-hmm. And I'm not great at it all the time. That's just some things that I try.
You're pretty good at that, I will say. Becky, this morning, one of our clients, chief people officer of a Fortune 20 company, sent me a note this morning. It was a video walking through that exact, your first two comments of human business model, human business, human, and the way I see it, the way you see it, and the way it is. It was a Simon Sinek video asking if poor performance, right? Like, oh, you've got poor performance. We need to redirect you because we can't handle it. And I think this hits on another question that came in from one of our live guests. The second one was, okay, what's going on? You know, you're not typically a poor performer. Here's what's happening. We see your performance or your quality or your, you know, even work product is less or has more challenges than before. Let's talk about this and the feedback of, what's really going on? Like, what's happening, right? You know, we say at Centennial and the Talent Magnet Institute, it's okay to get personal, right? Because leadership and work, like, it is personal. We've got to be able to motivate people to align, to understand, to gain their purpose of what they're trying to achieve in their life, the work that we're trying to do with our business, and how do you get these aligned? And the more you can understand someone's internal principles, the challenges, especially the struggles. I mean, just last week, I had a client tell me, Mike, I had no idea how many of my employees didn't have a home office, right? As a CEO, I mean, I've had a home office for 26 years, you know? And no, not everybody does, right? And these are the things that may be affecting. And oh, by the way, and they've been homeschooling their two children or their grandchild, or, you know, there's just a lot of dynamics going on right now. So I love the human business human in getting us to all, you still may have to make tough business decisions, right?
Right.
Before you do, please seek why. You know, so many organizations talk about turnover, and if they would just ask questions to understand why what's happening is happening, they would change workflows, they would change their employee handbook, they would change their policies and procedures, and they may offer benefits differently to actually help their people be successful. I mean, not just work, but in life too. So thank you for sharing that. You've written a couple of articles recently that have had a great following and lots of engagement. So Becky wrote one article on your team, this crisis, and who are the real leaders, which I posted earlier. And then you also just authored one on, will you be ready to hire a growth-minded leader? Reflect and plan now to evaluate quickly. To those that are on the call, I had the opportunity to sit. Many of you know that I'm in a family business. Centennial is a family business. And my dad's been doing this 45 years. Our team recently asked Mike Sr., what have you learned through the downturns, right? And of course, he starts back in 1984. Here's what I experienced. And you're like, you know, no, everybody wants to talk about 2008 when you talk about downturn. But he really drives home for us that this is very similar to 2000. Right. This feels like a crisis that happened that no one prepared for. And people were fearful. They were concerned. They're scared. Companies don't know how to interact. Some have shut down because of, some have not. But it's changed everything. It's rolled out new policies and procedures. It was just the financial crisis felt different to him. But one of the things that he reflected on and that we reflected on as a leadership team here at Centennial, you know, myself and Becky and Chris, and TJ and Janelle and Duran, and we've been looking at the numbers. And what we found is the same thing for our customers that we did. Our rebound, our 3-year rebound coming out of these, we did a lot of hiring and a lot of repositioning. So someone's strength that was identified during a crisis or during a challenge, you may actually put them into a new role, right? So how do you onboard them to the new role? How do you provide them the resources? Also, you may identify that some of what you need to do going forward looks different than what you did in the past. Therefore, we need to add some other skills and talents to our team. That's something that Centennial has experienced personally with our own organization. We've launched new business lines, new resources, new technology. I mean, you know, and we're experiencing it now too with many of the things that we're doing. But we also see a spike in different roles, in different opportunities, and different things and capacities that organizations are going to have. So Becky, when you wrote, will you be ready to hire a growth-minded leader? What are some of the key mindsets and perspectives you were hoping that our audience, our clients heard and listened and paid attention to?
Well, I think that it goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier on the growth-minded. You want to, you know, take inventory on who is on your team now, who showed up, and how did they show up?
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that some people may have been fighting another crisis while this crisis is going. Yeah. I do think that's a key point. There is the COVID-19 crisis, but life goes on too. There's the everyday life crises that we were having 6 months ago that are still going on too, that can cause people to fall off the wagon for a little while. So keep that in mind too, which goes back to it's so important to ask questions. But that growth-minded leader, you want people that are willing to reflect on their behaviors. One of my favorite questions in an interview is, what are you most proud about? If you look over the last 5 years, what are you most proud of? But really, the second part of that question is, what's your do-over in the last 5 years? And if you don't have a do-over in the last 5 years, heck, I have 5 do-overs by noon almost every day. Gosh, I wouldn't have said that. I wish I would have done this early. Not really, but I mean, if you don't have some do-overs, I wish I could have had that conversation differently. I wish I wouldn't have rolled out that product line without talking to more constituents. I wish I would have. That would be a concern of mine.
Yeah.
If everything you did in the last 5 years was perfect, because maybe you're not pushing yourself far enough. So if I was hiring a C-suite leader, which that's what we help organizations do, or a leader, a key impact leader, I want to hear those type of answers where they're reflecting. And most of our clients do too. They want somebody who's self-reflective and can be honest with themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just put in here, Becky, the 4 points that you put in this last article that you wrote around worried about, do I have a fixed mindset? And here are things that you offered up as words of encouragement. You know, again, just allow yourself to think freely, right? And to be honest with yourself. Take time for reflection. I love that one, you know, because so many of us have been working so hard, either with things going on personally or professionally, that it's time, you know, take a step back. Take a breather. Be unafraid of failure. I mean, I know that many of you on here, we've been talking to you. Like, there's a lot going on with our business. We don't know what things are going to look like, but we have to pivot out of necessity. We work a lot in retail and hospitality and organizations that have just been completely swept off their feet. And we also have manufacturing clients that, whether they're industrial or they're making valves or seals or candy, or everybody's being affected so differently. But yet, when we have conversation, people are experiencing the same things of uncertainty with our people, fear for myself. How's the business going to come back online? What are the narratives that I'm writing in my head because of past experiences? And those are things to take some time and reflect on. And if you're thinking them, others are too.
That's right.
So if we can think through, oh, this is what's really going on with me. If we could just get leaders to like pull that stuff out and not carry it around. You know, I know a episode we did on our podcast with Joe Motes, he talks about kind of the leader's backpack, right? We all keep pulling up the backpack. And if we could all act like we're going on a 100-mile hike, use a minimalist approach, that would be a much better way to carry on life, right? Because we all just pack stuff in our backpack. But once you start reflecting and opening up that backpack and communicating that backpack and sharing, here are the items that are in it that we need to address, here are things that we need to handle differently, and you may find that your peers may have the same items in their backpack, right? How do we address that, talk about it, use this time as an opportunity for vulnerability, because this is an opportunity for you as the leader to go first. One question that just came in is, not everyone has the luxury of vulnerability at work, right? And Becky, I'll share just a couple thoughts here, and then I'd love to back on that. So what do you do if your culture doesn't allow for vulnerability? One, the reason why all of you are on this call and all of you are listening to this episode is because you are a leader, right? So we specifically design our content and do all of our work in the leadership space. And as many in our industries that we're in tend to diversify by doing non-leader activities, we have stayed focused on the leaders that we serve and key leaders that we help organizations hire, and the consulting work we do incorporates the leader. And here's why. We know that if we can get the leaders to lead well, and we can build healthy leadership teams and help leaders be more vulnerable and help leaders create healthy, high-performing environments in a way that people want to be a part of, then we've done our job well, right? So the question is, if not everyone in your environment, if your culture doesn't allow you to be vulnerable, our belief is you're the leader, so it's time for you to go first, right? And if you think, well, I don't know what other people are going to think about me, think about everyone else in your organization who has that same feeling, right? You may have 700 people in your organization, across your organization at varying levels. And if you are on this call and you're a leader in some capacity, from business owner to key executive to leadership team, if you're not willing to do it, why in the world would they, right? And we know that when you create a culture that allows people to share and feel like they have a meaningful voice and allows them to be themselves, right? Some people, I don't know if any of you have seen the meme, but it's like when you go back to work, bring your whole self, because we've already seen your kids, your dogs, your cat. Bring your whole self to the workplace. We need the whole person in the workplace, right? So if not, guess what happens? We hide behind the mask. We hide behind the facade. We try to be something that we're not. And therefore, we never bring our best to the workplace, right? So my cop out of the question, if you don't have a culture of vulnerability, is that you're the leader. So it's time to be vulnerable. It's time to open up and you go first. And if people don't accept that, then my belief also is you're in the wrong environment. Right? So you can influence. Show people why you're doing it. Well, the reason why I'm vulnerable with my team is because look at how my team gels. Look at how we connect. Look at how we perform. Look at the fulfillment rate, the lack of turnover that goes on in my team, because they know I care for them and that I know they care for me too. So Becky, what is your thought around, if you're in a culture that not everyone allows you to be vulnerable, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I think you hit on it. If you start being vulnerable, and then when they observe you being vulnerable, then they start being vulnerable with their team. I've heard once, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've kind of stuck with it. I mean, you say, what's the right culture for you? A culture is really about 200 people. I mean, it's hard to get out besides, like, so that maybe director and beyond can have its own culture there in a large organization. So there's subcultures in many large organizations. So start small, and that's managing up. You start behaving in a way that you want your team to behave. And the next thing you know, somebody from your team goes to somebody else's team and they start behaving that way. And hey, change doesn't always happen overnight, like what we just experienced. But in this scenario, start behaving in a way that you want to see the culture head to. That's how I would handle it.
Yeah, that's great. And I just put a quote. It's great to be quoted, Becky. So I just quoted you. When Becky, in her most recent article on Dare to Dream, you can read this quote I put in the chat, but for those who might be exercising or walking or multitasking, Becky says, go ahead, set a new goal. Don't worry too much on the how you're going to get there. Set the goal, get comfortable with the goal, and then start thinking of your plan, right? So Dare to Dream, the context of that is you are the leader in your environment. We do believe at Centennial, just so you're aware, we believe that all people have the capabilities to be leaders, right? So we're trying to encourage people to like own who they are, take the tape that they have from their past, accept their experiences that have happened to them, but decide what their platform is going to be going forward, right? and enabling, inspiring, encouraging. I know that's what we've done, Becky, with our CEO roundtables, with our executive conversations that we lead, with our memberships that we now leaders can join the membership inside the Talent Magnet Institute to get this kind of facilitation and dialogue and conversations happening for themselves and their team. And the goal is really, so we've even labeled those memberships, empower, elevate, and embrace, right? Mm-hmm. So to stay along with the Centennial brand and the TMI brand, empower, elevate, and embrace. Our goal is to start by empowering, start by getting people to lead well, start by getting people to call bad behavior out on the carpet, start, more importantly, to celebrate the good that is in all of your people. Start by engaging in conversations where people go, wow, you know, Becky and I worked with a client for about 13, 14 years, and we helped this organization build out a sales organization. We helped them retool their entire marketing organization, supply chain team, operations team. And I remember being at a conference in Chicago with this organization, and one of the leaders came up to us that we did not place. And he specifically shared, Mike, you're with Centennial, right? Yep, I am. We were the only supplier in the dinner that was happening for the all-employee annual event. And we were the only supplier, vendor, partner. Their executive that we work with would say, you are my partner, which is why you're there. But this leader came up to us and shared, I cannot tell you how I read your blogs, I hear your content, but I'm living in one of the environments that you have partnered with our CEO and Chief People Officer and CFO to create. And this is the safest place I've ever been in. And you talk about an emotional, visceral reaction that I had. That's why we do what we do here at Centennial, right? And he was like, Mike, the people your team has placed, my boss, so in this environment, his boss, his boss's boss, we placed, his boss's boss was our main client, the CEO, and we have a deep relationship with their head of people and culture. And this is the safest place. They built you all as a team. We put probably 40 people in this organization over that 14-year time, and you all have built and joined together a culture of people who protect their people, who communicate vulnerably, who create an environment where I no longer have to look behind my back to see what's happening, right? And man, what a call to our why, right? Becky and I celebrated that conversation. Like, what a call to our why when you hear that this leader has created the safest environment and their whole team is bought in to being open. They adhere to kind of the five dysfunctions. It's influenced a lot of our work that we do with Centennial and TMI. They were such a long, dear partner of ours and have been for, you know, over a decade. This is why you go first. This is why you dare to dream. These are the kinds of cultures that you have the responsibility and opportunity to create inside your environment. So, Becky, as we move into the last few minutes here, how would you like to leave our audience today? What one or two additional thoughts can you share to inspire those that are tuning in to this discussion?
Well, we talked about communication and asking questions. I just think that it's important to remember as a leader that people are watching you, and how you respond to a situation says a lot more about you as a leader than it does about your employees or the company. So you really need to be thoughtful on your responses, and especially in crisis situations, people are watching, and you need to be present, you need to be empathetic and humble and lead well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for those that engaged in our conversations today. Becky, thank you for your leadership, your friendship, the opportunity to partner up with you and lead this organization well. And thank you to all of those, again, who have sent questions, have asked about topics and ways that we can serve. we're here for you. Our team is here to serve and we're here to support. And we hope that you've gained some great benefit in the encouragement today. And Becky, thank you again for this time.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great week.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Talent Magnet Institute podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode and help spread the word by leaving a review.
The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is powered by Centennial, a talent strategy and executive search firm, and the Talent Magnet Institute. You can engage with us at Talent Magnet I on Twitter or Talent Magnet Institute on LinkedIn and Facebook. Please communicate by using hashtag Talent Magnet. Find us in your favorite podcast app to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, as well as share with a colleague. You can also listen at talentmagnetpodcast.com. Our podcast studio is based in Greater Cincinnati, Ohio. We are supported by our listeners, clients, and partners from all over the world. The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is made possible by a great team that includes Janelle Spence and Christine Lewis of Centennial, Josh Chappelle and Adam Smith of SoundPress, produced by Chris Madine of New Fidelity.